will be able to hear the still, small voice of the air. Hi, I'm Anna, the Ethical Systems Nerd, with the April 25th episode of Nerd Nodes. Today's the birthday, in 1849, of Felix Klein, who would probably be vaguely disappointed that he's best known, at least in nerd circles, for the Klein bottle, and not for his profoundly influential research in the fields of geometry, number theory, group theory, abstract algebra, and mathematical physics, or his work as a journal editor, author, or his basically establishing the advanced high school mathematics curriculum for the 20th century. But it's probably better than being remembered for his signature on the Manifesto of the 93, a World War I propaganda coup in which 93 prominent German scientists, scholars, and artists, with the notable exceptions of Albert Einstein and Hermann Hesse, galvanized national support for German military actions by signing a pro-war treatise. Klein conceived the Klein bottle as a three-dimensional equivalent of a Möbius strip. These are both what are known as non-orientable surfaces, meaning there's no consistent way to define a perpendicular or normal vector. If you were to walk along such a surface, you could end up back at your starting point, but upside down. Ironically, or perhaps in intellectual self-defense, Klein also did extensive theoretical work on the gyroscope, a job whose job it is to tell you which way is up. A Möbius strip can be made by putting a twist in a piece of paper before taping its ends together. A Klein bottle requires a little more work to create, but you can search online and order blown glass Klein bottles, a Klein Stein, which is a functional but highly inconvenient and hard to clean beer mug, or even a combination hand-knit Klein bottle hat with matching Möbius scarf. 25 years to the day after the birth of Felix Klein, Annie Jemison, the granddaughter of the founder of Jemison & Sons Irish Whiskey and married to an Italian aristocrat, welcomed her second son, Guglielmo Giovanni Maria Marconi. Marconi enjoyed a highly privileged childhood, being educated by private tutors, one of whom provided him with a solid grounding in the new theories of electricity. At the age of 18, he was living in Bologna and hanging around the university, where he was exposed to the work of Heinrich Hertz and given the opportunity to attend lectures and use the laboratory facilities. Marconi spent the 1890s experimenting with prototype wireless receivers, adapting and developing components to perform telegraphy over wireless, and working on increasing the range over which he could send messages. Apart from his family money, Marconi was unable to find much support for his work in Italy, so he moved to Britain in 1896, filed for a patent, and spent a few years doing demonstrations at increasing range. On March 17, 1899, the first wireless maritime distress signal was sent, and later that year, wireless telegraphy came to the United States in a demonstration from the SS Ponce at the America's Cup yacht races. Wireless telegraphy was a perfect fit with the great age of ocean liners, allowing news and personal correspondence, as well as distress signals, to be sent to and from ships at sea. Marconi recognized this and set up a company to provide wireless services between ships and land stations. In March of 1912, Marconi boarded the Lusitania, bound for New York, and had, presumably, an uneventful and productive voyage. He had been offered passage on the upcoming maiden voyage of the Titanic, but the Titanic's public stenographer was the newly hired and unknown George Frederick Turner, a lifelong clerk looking forward to his first and unfortunately last ship posting. So Marconi opted for the known entity of the Lusitania's stenographer, a preference which may have saved his life. Thanks to the wireless telegraphy on board the Titanic, the RMS Carpathia was able to arrive on the scene within 2 hours of the ship sinking and rescued over 700 survivors from the lifeboats floating in the water, including one of the two radio operators, Harold Bride. Harold, despite being so seriously injured he would have to be carried off the Carpathia, would join his friend and the Carpathia's radio operator, also named Harold, in the Carpathia's radio room, sending the names of survivors on ahead to anxiously waiting family, friends, and newspaper reporters in New York. Marconi was also waiting in New York and took the opportunity for some of the best publicity he could ever ask for, boarding the Carpathia with a reporter to talk to the Heralds. 3 years later, Marconi would again board the Lusitania on its 201st crossing bound for New York under Captain Turner, who had been the Lusitania's first captain and returned after Commander Daniel Dow, preternaturally protecting his perfect record of never being involved in a collision or serious incident at sea, took 2 months sick leave due to the stress of traveling the submarine-infested waters of the North Sea during World War I. Captain Turner dropped off Marconi, took some time to testify on a hearing about the Titanic disaster, loaded his ship with passengers and possibly with explosive contraband, and set off on May 1st, 1915, bound for Liverpool, a destination the ship would never reach, as it was torpedoed off the coast of Ireland with the loss of almost 1,200 lives, precipitating the entry of the United States into World War I. Captain Turner, although remaining with his ship, was rescued from the wreckage. While Marconi's experiments hadn't been appreciated in his native Italy as a young man, that all changed once the technology was established and he was welcomed into the Italian establishment. When that establishment became fascist, Marconi did too, being appointed by Mussolini as president of the Royal Academy of Italy, placing him on the Grand Council of Fascism until his death from a heart attack in 1937. Both Klein and Marconi were unsuccessful in avoiding political entanglements, which they each professed a desire to avoid, while also going along with the flow and enjoying the fruits of high-ranking positions within their respective national establishments. Klein, writing after World War I to his English former graduate student Grace Chisholm Young, the first woman to write a PhD thesis in mathematics at Göttingen, thanks in part to Klein's support, declined to distance himself from his signature on the Manifesto of the 93, saying, "Everyone will hold true to their country in good times and bad." Both men believed that the rest of Europe treated their homelands unfairly. In Marconi's case, he went on a grand tour across Europe and Brazil to stress the point that Italy's genocide in Ethiopia was no different than what many other European countries had done in Africa, which may have been true, but was not quite the defense it must have sounded like in his head. As well as the birthdays of Klein and Marconi, today in 1792 saw the mayor of Strasbourg, Philippe Friedrich Dietrich, concerned about the European backlash to the French Revolution, commissioned fellow Freemason Roger de Lisle to write a song to rally French soldiers. The song was written that very night and is known today as La Marseillaise. On the same day in Paris, the guillotine made its debut as the official form of execution in France, a role it would fulfill until 1977. A year and a half later, the guillotine would take the life of Philippe Friedrich Dietrich, who got on the wrong side of Robespierre, although he would be posthumously pardoned and named a hero of the revolution. The guillotine and La Marseillaise have their birthdays on April 25th.